is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. It is hard to believe that it's been, we're just coming about 2 years approaching that with COVID-19. It's remarkable if you think about that we pretty much have lost 2 years of our lives with this crazy chapter that we surely have been living through. And you know, the thing about COVID-19 and the way it struck our world, it wasn't just one city, one state, one country, but it was the entire planet who has had some sort of impact or effect from this. You know, there surely has been a lot of questions. And what is not lost on me and should not be lost on you, still to this moment, are the lives that are being impacted. And now, of course, it's the vaccine mandates, and we're seeing the courts maneuver through here. But really, to me, the essence is the American public, the people who are taking the hit for this. I'll tell you what, the emails and the correspondence that come in here at the network is astounding. And your heart goes out to people. They're in these various difficult situations. As you know, do they subscribe to the social contract and put this vaccine in their body? Or do they, you know, with so many unknowns, and there are health risks for many people, there are other challenges, or do you lose your job and or derail your life, or, you know, upset your family and those around you? And this is what a lot of people are facing. It's real life challenges. And the horror stories continue to multiply. Was an executive order signed September 9th, 21, that it got everybody's attention. And this was the one that required vaccination for all federal employees. That is, unless you could somehow get an exemption as required by law. Now we were starting to see some things we had not really seen before. And this was like, everybody's got to get this thing. And it got steadily worse, right? It was on November 4th in 21 again, when the Biden administration announced other major vaccination policies and set January 4th as that deadline. And that is OSHA. And they mandated that all employers with 100 or more employees must be vaccinated or be obligated to have tests for COVID on a weekly basis, which are also controversial, by the way. And employers must ensure all unvaccinated workers wear that face mask in the workplace. Now, immediately, you had states push back. 26 states filed lawsuits against the federal government following the White House's announcement of this vaccine enforcement program. And this impacted well over 100 million workers, by the way. Now, of those 26 states, by the way, as a reference point, three of them were Democrat-led states as well. Many others were Republican-led states. Everything's always political, isn't it now, friends, you know? And the lawsuits argued that the federal government doesn't have the constitutional authority to put a vaccine mandate in place. Well, OSHA also, they say, lacked the statutory authority to enforce it, and the issue should be left up to states to decide. Well, but of course, in today's world, my fellow Americans, the federal government doesn't like that. They don't want the states to decide anything, and surely the American people, they want to be able to call the shots, you see? And that's where that goes there. There was a series of successes after that with some of the courts, you might recall, to get to the point, and against the unconstitutionality or this mandating. And let's be clear, this mandating, really what it is, it's a demand. What is a mandate? It's a demand. It's a demand. You will put this vaccine chemical into your body. Whether you like it or not, that's not the question. Doesn't sound very American, does it, friends? You know? In its order on December 15th, the Louisiana Fifth Circuit Court hinted at the likelihood that the Supreme Court will ultimately have to resolve the legality of the healthcare worker mandate, calling it an issue of great significance currently being litigated throughout the country. And sure enough, there it is, bringing us right up to speed, my friends. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals lifted the stay on the rule, just happened there late Friday evening. The rule was blocked on November 6th, just one day after it was formally issued by OSHA. And so it's been a ping pong game back and forth. And, now remember the arguments too quickly. OSHA does not have the legal authority to issue a rule regarding a society-wide health concern that goes far beyond the workplace. Even if reducing the risk of COVID is compelling, it is not necessarily a grave danger, as OSHA has declared it to be. They said, in addition, they argued that complying with the rule would be costly and could lead to worker shortages. Well, that's a whole other set of standards there and problems we've been having in the country, for sure. To which the court says, well, and I quote, fundamentally, the rule is an important step in curtailing the transmission of a deadly virus that has killed over 800,000 people. And that in itself was controversial, by the way, in the United States, brought our healthcare system to its knees. Forced businesses to shut down for months on end. Okay. And cost hundreds of thousands of workers their jobs. So that was the circuit judge, Jane Stranch. And this was an Obama appointee. And that's the thing about the courts. You know, again, the blind justice thing with the mask, the blindfold there. I always chuckle with that justice is blind. It's an absolute joke. You just have to look to see if they're who's appointee are they again, please? We all do that in the country. And then part of the country still runs around and says, well, but justice is blind, right? Yeah, sure. That's why we have these political appointees and what have you, right? It's a joke, my fellow Americans. Well, the Sixth Circuit's decision on the OSHA rule is not expected to be the final word, all right? So within hours of that ruling, at least three petitions were filed within the U.S. Supreme Court asking it to immediately block the mandate. And that's where we're headed, my friends. Some interesting storylines. Let's bring on first here, attorney Thomas Rentsch joins me. He's the lead attorney in several major cases brought around throughout the United States. He's been involved against the CDC, the DHHS, Anthony Fauci himself, regarding forced vaccine mandates, what we're talking about today, and many other things. I mean, big tech censorship, COVID-19 lockdowns, mask mandates, all the American rights and liberties that seem to be out the window today. Attorney Rentsch gets pretty involved in these cases here. Let me read you this real quick email that just came in about a day or so ago here. Well, just after that Supreme Court came in, I'd like you to respond to it. Now, this is a real listener. I don't know who she is, or I'll give you a first name only. Her name is Mariana, and she asks this. The question is about the latest disappointment with Sixth Circuit reinstating vaccine mandates. What is being done to address this and prevent a bad decision from the Supreme Court? She's asking the network now this time, okay? She says, if this is a scientific knowledge that vaccines do not prevent transmission, just on that basis, we do not understand how a logical person can mandate it or call unvaccinated a danger. This coupled with the importance of early treatment and lack of severity of the Omicron making OSHA proposal unreasonable. If you add vaccine injuries and death, the case against OSHA is even stronger. What is the path to getting this resolved for good? And then she says this as a caveat. Educating the public is great, Malcolm, and beneficial, though it's not sufficient. So I'm getting the sense that this particular listener thinks I can part the Red Sea here, potentially. I don't know. But how would you answer that listener back to start off with, Tom?
Well, I got to tell you something, Malcolm. I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here as an attorney, and I'm going to tell you that I found that Sixth Circuit ruling to be absurd, and that's the best thing I can say about it. You cannot argue that there's a compelling government interest in forcing a jab that doesn't do anything other than potentially make you sick, doesn't stop the spread, doesn't do anything good. You know, there's literally no evidence. We have a DOD document that shows that 60% of hospitalizations are in fully vaxxed, 71% of new cases are in fully vaxxed. It looks, based on the data, if the government could consider being honest for just a moment, which is unlikely, that the jab actually increases your likelihood of getting COVID. But, you know, there's no need to look at the science or the facts when you can lean on the politics, right? So I think it's a bad ruling. I think the Supreme Court, you know, it's hard saying. I mean, you would like to think everybody wants to talk about there being this conservative majority. Certainly Clarence Thomas and Gorsuch and Alito seem to be leaning towards reining in some Chevron deference and doing some other things that are good. it's just hard saying what they're going to do for sure. Now, that said, I think it's grossly unconstitutional to try and force a vaccine on anyone.
A lot of people, Tom, were waiting right now to see if where that last ruling with the Fifth on Louisiana was going to hold, what was going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, nothing holds because there's always another appointee somewhere that's going to come back and flip the cards again. I think it's a joke justice here anymore. And now, so what I'm wondering is they kind of were waiting for that early part of January to know with the OSHA thing that kept getting knocked down, what they would do to make these very difficult decisions for their families, their jobs, their lives that are really gut-wrenching. I mean, these are really, really gut. I mean, we can sit here, you and I, Tom, and say, you just got to make a decision. It's not that easy. When you're in these predicaments, you have real health problems, and you know taking this thing could have major consequences on your life, period, end of story. It's a serious topic. So talk real briefly about that timeline. What's the best case scenario with the Supreme Court? What's the worst case scenario, Tom, from your expertise, based on everybody who's listening, who says, hey, what the hell do we do? Do we have to go to this thing for the social contract just to put food on the table or what? What's the timeline from, you know, worst and best?
I think the timeline is undeterminable. I mean, the Supreme Court, I would imagine, will take this up quickly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, an exact timeline is impossible to predict. I don't know what they're going to do.
You think it's in weeks or months? Weeks or months? You think weeks?
I would say weeks. Yeah, I don't think it's months. What I will say, though, is that the listeners really need to understand. Mm-hmm. You have two options here. You could submit to tyranny or you can stand for justice. And I'm going to tell you that if we, the people, don't stand together on this, then all's lost. I mean, if we give on this, we give on everything. There is nothing else. And I want to, you know, you brought up something, but I want to explain the legal significance of this, right? So when we talk about, when I say that the shot doesn't work, there is legal significance to that, right?
Right.
So theoretically, there has to be some nexus of logic and reasoning behind a mandate like this. Now, there's different standards that can apply, but when you say that I'm going to force you to jab something into your body, there has to be a reason for an unelected bureaucratic body to do that. Now, remember, OSHA is not elected. They're not Congress. Mm-hmm. They're not legislative. They're not executive. They're bureaucrats. They're bureaucrats that can't be fired. They're not accountable to anybody. And, you know, it's an absolute nightmare. So the thing that you got to understand is that the very weak standard that we have to protect us from these bureaucrats is a standard that there has to be some sort of logic or nexus to logic in this. Mm-hmm. When an action taken by an administrative agency is arbitrary and capricious, well, it's generally invalid. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the reality is, and I've really got kind of an issue with this, and not all the attorneys agree, okay? In my opinion, when we go into these courts and we argue these as very narrow rules of law, but don't bring up the fact that they don't work, that's a lost cause. Now, the reason that I liked what happened in the Fifth Circuit was they recognized they don't work. So how can it be anything but arbitrary and capricious? Mm-hmm. And that's really a critical thing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't have to have some nexus to logic, what's to say that OSHA doesn't make you wear a hazmat suit every exactly. time you walk into the workplace? Yeah. I mean, exactly. It's ridiculous to think of. I mean, I know that's ridiculous, but the point
Well, you say that. I don't know how ridiculous it is. I mean, they keep going one step further, Tom. So who knows what comes next?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so, mm-hmm. I mean, this is, who's to say that OSHA is not going to make a new rule that you have to work from your home to keep, to ensure that there's no spread? I mean, where's the limit? Yeah. Where's the limit? And I know that seems ridiculous, but 3 years ago, who would have said we would be wearing masks and arguing about this?
Yeah.
So the thing about this is that the administrative agencies are out of control. And, you know, the courts have lost sight of the fact that without a good, solid, honest, I stress honest, factual basis for what you're doing, what they really become is dictatorial. There's not even a basis for what they're doing.
Right.
You know, so that is of legal significance.
Well, the key word you say is dictatorial, and that is a fact. I mean, I think everybody feels that right now because all these mandates are being pushed on you. I mean, you don't even have an option, it seems. And people are losing their grip in the process here. Tom, stay right there. I want to introduce you to a gentleman here next and further widen the story here. You know, back to the correspondence, get a lot of correspondence in, and this next one hit me pretty well for a couple of different reasons. And I'm going to read you the communications that came in. And the gentleman who sent this in, Justin, will join me in just a moment. But let me read you his correspondence here initially to us, who really fits into the narrative that Tom and I are talking about right now. I mean, this is really, to me, the center of the storm. And so listen to this here, please. Justin says, and I quote, "I am an IBM employee who is representing over 800 of my fellow employees in our fight against the vaccine mandate instituted by IBM on October 7th. We have fought for weeks and months, and we have been told to sit down and be quiet every step of the way. We have exhausted all of our internal means of seeking a redress and overturning this mandate. We're left with no choice but to make our story known to the public. By making our story public, it is our hope that the public light will force IBM to relent and remove their mandate. We also want to make sure that those at other companies know that what they're doing, that they're not alone. We know that feeling alone in this fight is one of the most crippling situations that a person can find themselves in. And we want those people to know that there are others fighting by their side." So you hear that message, and you know, it just tells you this problem is widespread, as Justin explains there. And, you know, let me bring Justin on now. And, you know, Justin, you know, IBM is it's a signature company. It's a part of Americana, I always call it, when you think of certain brands. Oh, IBM, there it is there. You know, everybody knows that brand. And so it was very representative to get into this with you a little bit here. So let's talk about that story with IBM and all those employees that you're working with. Give us a sense of what's happening, please, and where this fight is at right now.
Sure. I'll start from the top. So September 9th, the federal contractor mandate is put in place by President Biden, and that's Executive Order 14042. And then October 7th, our CEO institutes a vaccine ultimatum. And I appreciate that you don't use the euphemism of mandate, because in reality, it really is just an ultimatum. It's decide to take this jab or lose your job. And in response to that, on October 7th, on November 1st, a group of us got together and created a petition for a redress of grievances to the CEO, and about 348 employees signed this. We send it to the CEO on November 1st. November 4th, it gets rejected by the CEO. And fast forward a little bit to November 15th, we send that same petition, this time with 541 signatures, to the IBM board of directors. And we did that through email on the 15th of November. On the 18th of November, we sent it through physical mail. So we know both through email and mail, they've received it. And since taking the later date, November 18th, we have heard no response from the board of directors. So far, we've sent the petition to the CEO, has that rejected. We sent the petition to the board, we've heard no response. And on December 8th, we decided to take our story public for, like you said, two reasons. One, we need to shine a public light on this problem. And two, I realize that there are a lot of people, whether it's at IBM or other companies, that feel completely alone in this situation, because it's not a majority of us. It's sometimes it's single digits in a company percent wise that are fighting this mandate internally and said, no, we're not going to stand for this mandate.
Yeah. You really put yourself out on the line there. Has there been any kickback from anyone else in the company or management itself? The fact that you've become a central person in this fight?
No, not yet. And fine enough, I've heard nothing. And that's kind of the issue, is that there's no communication. There's no back and forth on this. This is just you submit to this ultimatum or you lose your job.
And that's the threat. That's a threat they give everybody. That's the threat, right? Right there.
Correct.
Yeah, you lose your job. Now, you know, when you initially sent this in, the Fifth Circuit had already ruled, and OSHA, we knew it was unconstitutional, and that sort of was the status. And it was like, okay, well, they're still doing this, even though, you know, X, Y, Z. Now, since you sent that in, though, you see what just happened with the Sixth and what I was just talking about with Attorney Tom Rents. How does that change anything here, or does it?
Right. So keeping up with the day-to-day legal, on December 7th, Georgia versus Biden puts an injunction on the federal contractor mandate. So that was originally the catalyst for this mandate at IBM. Even with that, up until the 17th, there was no executive order in place and there was no OSHA mandate in place. And IBM still continued its mandate. As of the 17th, now that OSHA mandate's in place, and that adds another variable into this equation of what are the obligations that the company has in terms of federal mandates that it has to abide by.
Okay. All right. So now it's getting a little more interesting, though, with this ruling of the Sixth, and dependent upon what happens with the Supreme Court, as Attorney Rents was just talking about here. Let's do this, Justin. What I'd like to do now is something a little unusual, but I think it'll be worthwhile. Let's bring Attorney Tom Rents into the conversation right now. I'll keep you right there as well. And let me have you ask any questions you might have. Let's just do it. I mean, Justin, you, any questions you may have to Attorney Tom Rents, he's right here with us. Please go ahead and ask him right now while we're on here. I'm sure you must have some. Go ahead.
I'm kind of curious what your thought from the outside of all this, because we live this day to day on the inside of the company. I'm curious what your thoughts are from the outside.
Well, I mean, we're seeing this in companies across the country, right? And some of these countries are social justice warrior activists who just drink the Kool-Aid of whatever the government says and never question anything. And those companies are really, I mean, I don't want to say they're lost causes, but they're very, very difficult to deal with, because we've not gotten to a point where we can really prevent a private contractor, a private entity from doing this if they choose to. I mean, our strongest action to prevent that is, you know, the workers. You know, when we get 500 or 1,000 workers that walk out, well, that tends to make a change. So that's kind of a big deal. But then you have the other companies that are trying to navigate. Well, you know, listen, we're just a company. We're not here as a social justice warrior. We just are doing what companies do, which is focusing entirely on making money. These mandates are bad for that, because you're going to lose workers. I mean, we see just in Ohio here, we just called in the National Guard because so many healthcare workers quit because, you know, the healthcare workers who are professionals and know that these aren't safe won't take the jab. So in a lot of companies, there's a recognition, there's a certain number of people that won't do this. They can't force it. And these people walk out. So it's bad for business and bad for the bottom line to try and force it. Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting if we had anyone that wanted to do a shareholder suit talking about how these mandates are going to damage the bottom line, and it'd be bad for investors. But, you know, if the government can give them cover by making a regulation or an order, then, you know, they've got cover and that shareholder suit would be lost. So, you know, with IBM, it's an interesting thing. I mean, software engineers are hard to come by, especially good ones. And there's a lot of competition for that. It's kind of like hospitals with nurses. They're hard to come by. So, you know, from the outside looking in, what I see is kind of this tug of war. We've got a government that's doing everything it can to take total control of everybody's lives. And you've got, on the other side, you've got the people who absolutely refuse to give up authority, because there are a few of us that still have enough sense to stand for freedom. And then in the middle, you have a lot of these companies, and the companies are going back and forth. This is horrendous for our economy.
Exactly.
This is horrendous for the stability of our nation. And this is exactly what the enemies of the United States, which are supporting Biden in this, want to see. They want to see this instability. They want this chaos. They want people to not know what's going to happen. They want people to just give up. The question is going to be whether or not we do it. And from the outside looking in, you know, the best I can tell you is that if enough of you walk out, it's going to crush the company.
Exactly. I want to talk about that. There's to your point right now, a lot of these industries, whether it be in IT, as you're saying, or healthcare or police or firemen, what have you, they're like, you know, Tom, there's a lot of worker shortages, right? They're creating a drama on the front lines. I mean, there's people are that don't want to, you know, succumb to this, these orders. They are leaving the jobs and all. But, you know, there's something, and I'm thinking about that with Justin's case and IBM and so many others. You know, I always remind listeners, there's more of us than there are of them. That this is an important point. There are far more of, and there are far more good people in the world. And let me just remind everybody, please, it's so important to remember, there are far more good people in the world than there are evil. There are far more people that, in the case of you, Justin, even with IBM, there are more of you all than there are of them specifically. So like you've got a pretty large group there. That's got to be power in numbers. I mean, that's got to matter somewhat. And I think, Tom, if you could gather all those folks and make a compelling case to the executives there, I would think they'd have to listen, wouldn't they?
You know, you would think that they would, you know, from a legal perspective, it's questionable, but from a, just a business sense perspective, I think it's very strong. You know, one of the things that has been really interesting here is both the importance and total breakdown of the unions, right? When the people, when unions started, and I really love the concept of a union, but the unions are broken. And when unions started, they were about workers banding together because they were being taken advantage of by employers. So the people with the money and the power that ran the companies were essentially taking advantage of the workers. And the workers said, we've had enough. And we, you know, they decided what they're going to do. And so we, as a nation, decided that it was a good thing to support that. And I think that that conceptually is wonderful. What we've seen, unfortunately, is how corrupt our unions are. I mean, the unions are not representing the people in any way, shape, or form. What they're doing is representing their own interests and whichever party's going to pay them off the most, which is typically the Democrats. But, you know, the Republicans are really not innocent in this in any way, shape, or form. Exactly. So what we have is a broken union system. But the concept is still critical. You know, so you've got 800 employees at IBM. Now, IBM's a big company, but, you know, 800 employees, particularly if they're core employees, you know, software engineers, things like that, will do immense damage if they walk out.
Right. Well, let's talk about that with Justin. Justin, answer that point, talking about the group there. What's the sense of folks there, and are they willing to toe the line and go there? And what have you thought about that?
Well, from what I understand, at least talking to this group and seeing who's in this group is composed of everyone from program managers to program directors to software engineers, help desk personnel. It basically spans the entire spectrum of what IBM's positions are in just about every pay grade and every level. So it's a pretty diverse group when it comes to, this isn't just, you know, people who are, let's say, the lowest levels of IBM, where these people come and go pretty quickly and the turnover is pretty quick. I mean, these are people, we have people who are multi-generational IBMers, people who have been at the company for decades that I know have left the company now because of this.
So you mean they've already left the company because of this?
There are a few people who have left the company because of it.
Okay. So they've already felt some of the ramifications of this then. Has there been any word or thought about getting all these, I mean, what if all these folks, I mean, I don't know. I know this is a challenge because you probably, a lot of you work remote. In fact, that was a caveat to the story I wanted folks to know. When, you know, the whole notion of a vaccine mandate is for whose health and benefit again? And I mean, other workers, somebody somewhere, I don't know where, but in your case, Justin, you work majority from home. Is that you're not even in the group, are you?
Correct. Just to add a little bit of levity to this, I'm a permanent work from home employee who has already had COVID.
So with that group in the apartment of those people, have there been any thought to, I mean, because now January's coming real quick here and you've got an ultimatum coming. Is that correct?
Correct. So we were told the quote is mid-January 2022.
Do you think they'll, Justin, do you get a sense that they'll step down off their perch, the executive, that at the last minute? Because I'm seeing other stories, by the way, just for everybody, and you've seen this as well, I'm sure, Tom. I mean, I've got many reports. A lot of other companies are starting to get rid of that. They're not going along with OSHA, and they're stopping it. And we're seeing more and more. Are you seeing that, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what they're doing is they're trying to wait till the very last second. They're telling you there's going to be a mandate. And then in the 12th hour, when they realize exactly how many workers they're going to lose, they back off. And a lot of times the reason for that depends on the industry and the company. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times the reason for that is, you know, they figure, well, if we can get whatever threshold there is to get some additional government money for saying that we have this percentage of our force vaccinated, mm-hmm. you know, that's great. And, you know, then at the last minute, we're going to back out.
But, because, you know, Tom, on a human level, that is so wrong. It isn't funny. And I'll tell you why. What you just say, they're so wrong. And I really speak out about these companies and these executives who are doing this, because you're putting other people's lives at risk. By forcing this in, they have problems with their hearts, problems with their bodies. They don't take, their body doesn't handle this well. You're forcing them to do something. They die. They get seriously injured or screwed up, all because you were playing cat and mouse games. And that really irritates the hell out of me, Tom, you know?
Well, but you got to understand, Malcolm, you and I are people that actually have, you know, faith in God and believe in morality and right and wrong. These companies don't. They have absolute, all that they care about is the bottom line. See, here's the problem, right? I'm a huge capitalist, but no society, capitalism, communism, pick your thing. None of them work without morality. Communism can never work because there's never perfect morality. Capitalism works, but there has to be a moral foundation. And the problem is we've destroyed our moral foundation. You're seeing cracks in capitalism, and the cracks are that the businesses, a business, when you form an LLC or an S corp or a C corp or whatever you form, that organization has one purpose: maximize profits. And when you go to work for that company, your job is to maximize profits, short term and long term. That is the point of a business. Now, when profit is not governed by some sort of morality, and you're willing to do anything and everything possible to come right up to the edge of the law without stepping over it, just to maximize profit and morality be damned, well, that's a real issue, right? Yeah. And that's what we're seeing here, is these companies care zero about their employees. They care zero about what's right. All they care about is profit. Yeah. All they care about is their bottom line, who can get the biggest paycheck quickest. That's what's going on in the hospital systems and why they're trying to they're killing people.
Big time. And they've been being paid all kinds of dividends from the federal government, as you say, Tom. Justin, speak to that point and give you the last word on this. Speak to that point that Tom says, and what's the resolve in this? What's your best hope right now moving into January with IBM?
Right. So this group was actually formed originally because these employees were looking to get either medical or religious accommodations. That's kind of what brought this group together. Now, full disclosure, I don't have a religious accommodation request. And even though, just like you both, faith is the highest part of my life, there's something in me that can't bring myself to have to basically stand an inquisition about my faith to be able to continue working like I was on October 6th. Now, from the outside, a lot of people, what I've experience had thought that you just request a religious accommodation, you get your rubber stamp religious accommodation, you're good to go for indefinitely, then you're covered from this. At least in our case, I know of that. I can't give an exact number, but I know anecdotally of many employees who have gone past 70 days without receiving a accommodation, either approval or denial. And I think the perspective from the outside is that this is, if you don't like this mandate, just get your rubber stamped accommodation and everything goes away. And that's just not the case from inside the company. And you guys were talking about the damage that this has caused. I'm an employee who's trying to honestly look out for this company. And what bothers me is that the thing that's separated IBM over the years from the rest of other companies in this field is that the IBM family is kind of like the core unit in this company. And this mandate or ultimatum has completely desecrated a lot of the structures we've had inside this family. I mean, I know people that have spoken to me about almost getting divorced from their spouses. People have spoken to me about, how do I put food on the table for my kids as we go through Christmas? I mean, the devastation on a personal level from this ultimatum is pretty incalculable.
Oh yeah.
And it's difficult to say from the inside, because we kind of live this day to day, but it's tough to get that across on the outside, that this is not just, you know, if you don't like it, just get your accommodation, go away, be quiet. And what do you have to worry about?
Justin, that is so well said, beautifully said, my friend. That's you just nailed it right there. And you're exactly right. I mean, I see the communications. I mean, people that reach out to our network, and I get sick to my stomach on days, Justin. I really, really do. And I want to help everybody. And I'm so, limited because the volume is so huge. And we do Q&As with Dr. Henry Ely, with Dr. Dina McCullough. We try to get the answer, but I just can't get to 1% of them. And I feel guilty and horrible about it, and people's lives. And some of these are dire situations. They're in hospitals, they're on ventilators, they're trying to do this, they're trying to do, I mean, the communications are just heart-wrenching at times. And then the pressure we're all put in with this situation that you just say, Justin, is unconscionable. You're exactly right. When we're put in these different, creating divorces, creating family matters, friends are at odds with each other, people are calling each other out. It's a real troubling thing. This is not exactly what you call uniting a country, which is what they tried to say they were going to attempt to do. This has been a division amongst divisions in our nation. Justin, I am wishing you great success here. We'll continue to follow up with you on this. Perhaps there's an idea or two that come out of this from Attorney Tom Brents. I don't know. I know he's a fighter, man, and he is on the front lines. But I'm wishing you great success coming into the new year and with whatever happens. And, you know, my real hope is that the Supreme Court gets their arms on this, Justin, and they say, what the hell are you people smoking? Knock it off. That's what I really hope, Justin, you know?
I appreciate that. And I appreciate you having me on. And just for anybody listening, if you guys, you know, or in our situation, or you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, you can go to our website at againstfederalmandates.com, and you can basically see our story and what we've done so far. And sign up to our newsletter if you want to keep up to date.
I'll put that in the podcast. Well, againstfederalmandates.com, brother, right?
Yes.
We'll put that in there as well. Perfect. Perfect. All right. Tom, last thought here. You know, this is a pandemic, and in the last moment or so I have, which I would call, Tom, fear. This is a fear-induced, and I just want to share with you and listeners a moment here. I see, the message just in the last day or so, and this really rips me up, man. You know, President Biden warns of a winter of severe illness and death for the unvaccinated. And this is the headline. I mean, and it's all over. Then you see, you know, and then I get a newsletter in, Tom, from the New York Times in the morning. I get them from different, I like to keep track of what the Marxists are doing. So I typically have some of those come in here. And this one here says, good morning, from New York Times here. The Omicron is spreading and most adults remain unvaccinated in many communities. You know, that's the headline there. You know, it's like, damn you. Now, what the hell does an unvaccinated have to do anything to do with the Omicron? I don't know. Or good morning, for that matter. But this is the sort of thing we're being hit with. And people have this fear. And that's why people are outside jogging and walking with masks on. They're succumbing. Yeah, give me the vax, doc. Give it to me, man. I'll take it through. I mean, this is crazy time. Absolute crazy time, Tom. What's the last thought on it, buddy?
Well, let me hit one of the most important things I'm going to say. In June, we talked about the fact that this fall there would be a new and terrible mutant strain of this disease, a new just iteration that was going to kill us all, and that it was going to be a horrible thing and that we all had to fear. One of the things that you have to understand is they just authorized this drug for 5 to 11-year-olds. You're going to have kids having heart attacks and strokes. In fact, there was just, I just got a copy. Apparently, I want to say LA County Schools, it may have been someone else, put out a letter to parents saying that they should expect heart attacks and strokes in children.
Oh my God.
Wow. Of course, nothing to do with the vaccine. Now, Omicron, when it came out, you see all this, oh, it's a new mutant strain. There's all these mutations. It's going to be different. This one will affect kids. This one will cause heart issues. This, all this other stuff, right? And there's going to be all these unusual clinical manifestations because of all these mutations, right? Okay, let me read you this. Vaccine-associated enhanced disease, VAED. VAED may present as severe or unusual clinical manifestations of COVID-19. Now, that's vaccine-associated enhanced disease. That is an important potential risk listed on a Pfizer document for this vaccine. We knew, they knew, we were right. If you get the jab, you're at risk for VAED. Now VAED is here. They have to have a reason. They have to have a way to cover up these children dying. They're going to try and blame it on Omicron. Omicron is nothing more than the vaccine variant. That's where we're at. The vaccine variant is here. It's going to kill a lot of kids and a lot of people. If you give this to your kid, you may kill your child. And I don't know how else to say that.
Yeah.
And if you've given it to your child, you may have killed them. And I'm sorry if you have to hear that, but that's the way it is. Mm. And I pray to God we can find a way to fix us.
Yeah. A big thank you here always to attorney Tom Renz. It's always great to have his voice in the mix, and also tremendous blessings and good luck, and just wishing good things for Justin and all the our fellow Americans at IBM and all corporations and businesses throughout our great country. Listen, business is the heartbeat of our country. As Tom says, we're capitalists. This is what makes America what we are and who we are. We're not a communist country, right? At least we weren't. I don't know where we're headed these days. You can second guess that one. Up next, we have a very fascinating story you must hear. This is a story amongst stories with a young man, 16-year-old Gavin, and what he went through in his life right here. This story will move you in ways that maybe one hasn't before. Stay right there, my fellow Americans. More Viewpoint in just a minute.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm excited to talk about a new product from Healthy Cell, AC11. This is a patented bioactive extract of Uncaria tomentosa from the Amazon rainforest. It supports cell DNA repair and health span. It's a dietary supplement. I'm excited to try it. Many are interested in longevity and attenuation of senescence. We know that telomere length and other biologic measures are related to senescence in clinical and preclinical studies, particularly of animal models. And I can tell you as a doctor, dietary supplements do hold the promise of attenuating repair and damage in our body due to stress, physical wear and tear, sunlight, etc. And there's a tremendous opportunity for supplements to help us in this area. And so Healthy Cell has brought a product to market for you to try as part of your health portfolio. So please go to healthycell.com and in the promotional code, list out loud for 20% off your first purchase of products from Healthy Cell. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
AmericaOutloud.com. Simply put, we're patriots who believe in Ronald Reagan's vision of a shining city on a hill. From sea to shining sea, you can listen in on iHeartRadio. Our free apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa, or our world-class media player. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all. Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here, yours truly, and thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission here. You can hear this every Sunday, as you know, 10 a.m. in the morning is the first edition you'll hear, and there's an encore later in the day at 6 p.m., and thank you for helping us get the Out Loud truth out there. Please share the show and let people know that, listen, liberty, it's alive and well, and it's right here at America Out Loud. You can get us anywhere in the world on the iHeartRadio network or our own apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa are terrific. And we have a great media player. There are many, many ways to listen, countless ways. But the show on podcast about 3 p.m. Sunday afternoon, you'll see it atop of America Out Loud. Now, I've got a very interesting story I want to share with you right now. When we talk about we need good stories here, Malcolm, surely coming into the end of the year and getting ready to embrace a new year here. And I want to read this to you. It came from a grandmother, Lori. So we'll refer to her as Grandmother Lori and her grandson, Gavin. And they will both be on the program in just moments here. But let me read you the correspondence first, please. And Lori says this. Through the turmoil that we are facing, I would like to provide evidence of the future not being all lost. Gavin, a 16-year-old boy, still advocates and stands for freedom, humanity, and Christ. Now follow me on this next part. This gets pretty precarious here. Gavin recently went to an open hearing in court in which a man was being sentenced for being impaired while driving. Gavin was the passenger that had a crushed right pelvis, a rod in his right femur, and every extremity casted, wasn't cast. He was totally dependent and had to learn to walk again, as you can imagine, right? Gavin wanted to speak at the hearing, and what he said brought tears to the judge, the defense, and the prosecution. And I might add, my fellow Americans, it will probably bring tears to your eyes as well right now. Gavin's statement to the judge in the courtroom was this, and I quote, "You don't have to ask for my forgiveness," he said to the man. "I was never mad at you. I'm glad you're sober now. Your family needs you. I'm glad it was me in the car instead of the little kids because they could have been killed. You have a disease and it's addiction. We don't hate people with the disease of cancer, and we shouldn't hate people with the disease of addiction. God has given me and my family a lot of blessings with the accident. Give it to God." And those were the words from Gavin. And Lori goes on to say, then Gavin asked the judge if he could give the man a hug. This happened in Clay County Court, Indiana. And the judge stated, "All the years I've been doing this, I have never had anything like this happen. With all the troubling events today, my hopes were that letting others know there is hope for the future because there are young people like Gavin that will lead us with divine intervention into tomorrow." Gavin's grandmother, Lori, states and closes that correspondence. My friends, this was obviously a life-altering situation that Gavin found himself in, could have easily lost his life and was put into a very difficult position. And as I talk to you about all the time in the world here, we are all faced with difficult decisions of being victim or victor. That's the decision. Everybody goes through it. Everybody you know, and you included, we all get these moments in our life. Are we going to be victim or victor? And we have to make that choice. And it's a choice that will impact your life and everything you do thereafter. Let me now bring on here Gavin right now and talk about this moment in court. I want to start with you, Gavin. What was on your heart? What was stringing with you to make those comments and put that out there in the court? What was your feeling? What was the sense? What was the moment like, please?
How I was really feeling was like, I always been treated how to forgive. And I like, even like the smallest stuff, it were big stuff. You can see, I would like to forgive over it. And I understand the mistakes a person made. And like I always hear it from my family, I've been taught, is you don't hit a person with cancer. I knew that guy was had a disease, and I felt I knew that he wasn't purposely out there trying to hurt me.
So you knew it was an accident, obviously. He didn't intend to do it, but you know, but he did it just the same, and it cost you a great deal of pain. Here's the thing. Sometimes I find, Gavin, or actually a lot of times, we go sometimes through these low moments of our lives where we, like, if I was to ask you right now, the accident and what you went through afterward has probably changed your life in magnitudes that is hard to express here, probably. And sometimes when a low moment in our life, there can be a silver lining of what we learn from it and where we get to the other side. Is that the case with you?
Yes, I would take anything that is bad in my life, I would end up bringing something positive out of it. Like doing with the court case and with my wreck and all that, that brought, because my grandma and mom was going through stuff at the time, losing relationship-wise over demons my mom has been fighting. And with that accident, end up bringing the relationship with my grandma and her back together.
So there was positives that came out of that.
Yes, sir. And I went, honestly, one thing I can say, I would never change nothing about that, because if it wasn't without that, I don't know what relationship my grandma would have with my mom right now. And I would honestly go through that wreck again for anyone else's experience what I went through.
I want to talk to you, Laurie, a moment, a grandmother again of Gavin. And you see, you've seen a lot of things in your life, Laurie, and you see Gavin goes through the situation. You know, it's pretty, how do you say? I mean, it's unprecedented, number one, for somebody to have the courage. I don't care how old you are, whether you're 16 or 61, to be able to have the courage to be able to stand up and make that sort of a statement in front of a court, knowing what you just went through. Was you in the court that day, and did you know that was coming, and what did that mean to you?
Yes, I was in the court also, and I never asked Gavin what he was going to say.
Wow.
Because I trusted whatever he needed to speak would be respectful in the eyes of the courtroom. And I was a little taken aback, and I don't know that I would hope I would be that good, but I don't know that I would. Mm-hmm. That took a lot, because he missed out on the sixth grade trip, and, you know, but he truly took it all like as a very positive experience, and we truly all were blessed for it.
The accident itself and the consequences of it, the problems, the pelvis, the right pelvis, the right femur, the cast and all of that. What was the total healing time, Laurie? How long did all that take for Gavin?
Oh, goodness. I'd say probably about 8 months, 6 to 8 months. And he's had to have another surgery, you know, on the arm.
Yeah. Still going through things, in other words, right? There's still repercussions.
Yes.
From that. Yeah.
Yes, because like the growth plate through the right wrist, the radius, which is the inner bone of the wrist, continued to grow, and the ulna stops, or, you know, so it was just, you know, there was a lot more afterwards.
Right.
I don't know what I found so surprising after all this, he joined cross country his next year of school. And at a meet, I told the coach, well, yeah, I saw him running, and he wasn't the fastest by any means. Mm-hmm. But I told her, I said, not too bad for a boy that couldn't walk a year ago.
Wow.
And she looked at me with like a questioning look. And I said, he never told you? And she said, told me what? I said, he had to learn to walk again. And I asked him later why he did that. He said, because I didn't want special treatment because of the accident.
Wow.
And I wanted to know that I could do it.
Yeah, Gavin, that's remarkable. That speaks to character right there. That, you know, I always tell my son about character, and I describe it this way, Gavin, and you'll appreciate this. Having character, it what does that really mean to a young person? Maybe that's 10, 12 years old you talk to. What does it mean? It means to me doing the right thing when nobody's looking.
Right. Amen.
Yes.
That's what character is. And that's what that means, the way your grandmother stated that. You know, I'm impressed that a couple of things here. I'm really, really, really impressed, both of you, for these couple of reasons, to be sincere always about this. You know, the fact that Lori, you didn't put words in his mouth and get him just because everybody would sort of, most people would try to do that, being afraid of what the young person would say, the young son, girl or boy, whatever. And so they would tell him what to say in the court. Yet you just stayed back and let him do what he was going to do. And he had to find it in his own heart, his own soul, to say what he was going to say. That's remarkable. And then the fact that you're in the next year, you're on the track there and you're running now and you don't tell them about any of this speaks to that. Gavin, talk to me a moment about how that's all going now, your life today, with what you want to do, where you're at, and what do you see ahead, and what do you want to do in your life, please? I'm very curious.
Like I said, I'm keeping on track with my second year of lettering for South Midland Wildcats and
cross-country.
Yeah, cross-country. So I plan on of keeping it with track, and my coach showed me something that makes how I feel is, lady, you had some problem with her spine and how she lost the ability she couldn't walk for a while and stuff. And I think that's why she ran track. And I thought to myself, I think that's the reason I joined cross country, so I can enjoy, don't forget about the struggles of walking again and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm actually being public speaking debates. I was in a debate class last year.
Okay.
And I like hands-on stuff. And what I plan on is being a public speaker somewhere down the line.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, and do you have interest in politics or no?
Yes, sir.
Everybody has interest in politics, right? I mean, what's that old saying? They say you either get involved in politics or politics will get involved in you, right? It's one or the other. You're a very good communicator, a good orator, actually. I'm very impressed. I haven't talked to you before just now till the mic went hot, of course. And you really do resonate well, Gavin. So that's a very cool thing. Listen, I am wishing you great, great success ahead. I believe we'll talk ahead somewhere down the road here. I'm sure of it. And I'm wishing you both a merry, merry Christmas, as I do here, and just all the blessings in the world, Gavin and Lori.
Yeah, Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely here. What an incredible story, my fellow Americans. And you can see why that touched my heart. I love these kinds of stories. If I could just do these stories and let the political scene go, this would be my love right here, my first love, being able to showcase the greatness of people. What I always reference is the brink of greatness. It's in all of us. We all have potential for this. I tell you, really, it is there. And we need to encourage others to do the same as well. Great program today, and a tremendous thank you to Attorney Thomas Rentz up top the program there, the IBM executive Justin, and him talking about what's going on with those mandates and all of that. And right here on this segment here, Grandmother Lori and 16-year-old Gavin, and his incredible story here. Well, my friends, that's it. We're coming on to another year end coming up here. We got a lot of special features going on the network and throughout the Christmas season and into the new year. Stay close, of course. We'll remind you of all of those along the journey here, all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Merry, merry Christmas to all. And remember, it's time to get involved and get loud.